88.9 Win FM, welcome to Covering the Canvas. I'm your host, Jesse Beard, joined here by the Covering the Canvas team. Right in front of me tonight, the first woman of Covering the Canvas.
Yeah, that joke's not going to get old fast and dated. Thank you, Jesse.
How you doing tonight, Ben?
Yeah, good, man. Good. How about yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you. Awesome. To the right of you, Shane Hero, Australian wrestling legend.
Yes.
A pillar of the community.
Pillar of salt.
Yeah, pillar of salt. Commissioner Norris.
I'm in the house.
Not shutting up like normal.
You imagine that at techno rave. Yeah. Norris in the house. Everyone just starts pumping, goes to get their cans out.
And the other British person of the show, Steve Bradford.
Hello.
And we are joined here.
The spirit too much, you see, so I'm going to cut mine back, obviously.
I don't believe there actually is a Steve Bradford. Hello. I actually think it's Dave Norris with his hand up the back, just like a puppet.
Like Dickie Knee.
Yeah. You get your hand nowhere near my Dickie or my knee.
And you two flirt now.
We are joined in studio tonight by boxing and wrestling journalist Mike Altamirum.
And boxing manager as well.
And boxing manager.
But yeah, pleasure to be here.
Thank you for
Can
coming
you
out to
just pronounce that name again?
Altamirum.
Altamira. They're saying about Altamirium.
We went over it like five times before the show. Mirror. I wrote it down.
No, he said Rob Lager is Rob, was it Logo or something like that?
Don't worry, you're right. I just had the Bunbury Times refer to me as Emma Latoura, so...
I'm not even that bad. There we go. Thank you for coming out to beautiful freezing Werribee tonight. It is nearly... It's not even 8 degrees out. That's cold.
Feels about -8.
I agree. Let's get straight into the show.
He's actually giving the show a score.
Let's start off with some local news. Platinum. They went up. We had two shows this weekend. This Friday night with Untouchable, main evented with Zach Douglas beating Josh Shooter to defending his title in what was an insanely fast-paced match. It was. Down at Hotel 520.
Mm-hmm. Sales Road, Tarnit.
Is it motel or hotel?
It's hotel.
Hotel 520.
I had to keep double-checking that during ring announcing because I was almost certain I was going to say the wrong thing, and there's no better way to probably annoy a venue than on your first night referring to them as the wrong name when thanking them.
If Hogan can get away with it, I'm pretty sure you can.
Yeah, it's a huge crowd. It was nice, loud.
It was a great crowd.
Nice. I'm hearing nothing but good things about the weekend for Platinum.
Absolutely.
It's just it's good to see that actually a brand can grow so fast out of really just a small gym. Yeah. Show. A lot of hard work's been going into it, and I know a lot of the boys are very excited about what you guys have been doing. So I'm just looking forward to seeing what you've got planned next.
Yep. And some really good matches throughout both shows as well. A really strong card with some excellent roster being built up there as well.
It's good to see with different promotions working together too, because when Sid defended his
Hunter Valley
title against Slade Mercer in a brilliant match, and we also had the Warzone guys come out with their titles too. So
yeah, appreciate you guys hosting them too.
It's good to see that we can do that sort of thing now, and it's not forbidden. How dare you, kind of thing.
I think it's just the bubble. Too many places have got the wrestling bubble where they're terrified to acknowledge someone else. As long as they're not in your doorstep or anything, or you're making anyone's title look bad. Or any other promotion look bad.
Yep.
But everyone is moderately professional enough to do that nowadays, I think. So, hey, I look forward to... When is your next date?
July 31st, back at the Hotel 520.
So. I'll come to that. I'll get drunk.
And another thing.
The next night, Platinum also presented King of Collect 2 in front of an absolutely mental crowd. It was the loudest crowd I've ever seen. We saw Slade Mercer become the new King of Colac by winning the King of Colac Battle Royal. And hometown hero Sketch beat Zach Douglas via DQ, with Zach retaining his title again. Now that crowd,
my boy Sketch, good on
your
you, Sketch.
Boy Sketch, yeah.
That crowd,
country crowds are the best.
Yeah. I can't even put it into words. Like, I'm just mumbling over what I'm trying to say.
We've created a legend in Sketch. Sketch is never going to have to pay for a thing in Colac again.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he'll pay. No, I think, though, this is the thing. When you do these country shows, we learned that with Ballarat last year. You you really have to capitalize on who you have locally.
They love their local talent.
They do.
Local boy.
And the thing is, because it's a local town, it's a sports orientated town.
Yep.
That means anyone that plays football, anyone who's got basketball, they are seen, you know, as something special in town, because they've got, it's a physical place, and there's not that much entertainment to compete with. So if you could catch their attention, you're going to do great things. And like I said, I was getting text messages and stuff like that after my show when I finally kind of calmed down, and yeah, I was just, you know, people were just raving about it. They were so happy and stuff like that. So now, congratulations on both shows. How many were there?
Just under 300.
Just under 300.
That's good, man. So. That's especially good for you. What, second show there?
Second show.
And
yeah.
I'll give you credit as well, fans. Because you know what, I in the back of my mind was sort of thinking they did all right the first time they were into Colac. If they're going back again, maybe it'll be a little bit less this time. They might be a bit disappointed, but congratulations, because to actually go, I mean, that's almost probably close to double
it,
the
it was
first
good.
Time.
We, basically, when we set up, we set up for the numbers that we got last time.
And it filled up like that.
And the young lady from the ticket office came in to have a quick look, and she said, you haven't got enough chairs. And we just looked at each other and thought, excellent.
There was a lot.
Nice
that was
send them away.
Nice problem to have.
Also on the same night, Warzone 23.
Yeah, Injury Mania, as I've been calling it. Look, for anyone that doesn't know, that was our last night in Berwick. It was kind of a bittersweet evening for me, because that was a venue that saved my company. Mm. Dave Nice, who's been with me since the first Warzone, can attest that we were on very hard times at that point.
Yep.
And we got there, we sold out, and we went, selling out for nearly... almost about 4 or 5 years after that. I think we only had one dodgy show. That was Warzone 10, and that was only due to a muck-up in the newspaper advertising. But, unfortunately, there's been some controversy at the school. I'm not going to go into nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's a pretty dark thing that happened there.
Absolutely.
And so we've decided to move on. Best wishes to the venue. PCW will be picking up from there.
Yep.
But I thought it was a... Because of the situation, the crowds were a little bit down, sadly, from our usual. However, it was still a great night. Sadly, we had a couple of injuries. Mikey Law decided to see how hard the floor is in Melbourne by diving face first. And, Jim Ray's, same deal. But both men, a testament to their professionalism and or stupidity, continued and actually just hammered through, especially Jim Ray's. If you take a look, you would never have known he was knocked out.
I didn't pick it until you...
No, he was like a machine in that. But also, we main event, due to Adam Brooks being injured, ended up being Tyson Gibbs versus Mad Dog McRae.
Would have been a good match.
It was a great match. Mm-hmm. And the crowd were nice and loud. And that's the thing, we've had nothing but smarks in the crowd lately, like very hard fans at Warzone over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And this show, the crowd were nice and loud. Very, very good send-off.
Seems to have a very loyal fan base there.
Yeah, we do.
Which are going to follow you from that.
I'm not going to be insane and think that everyone will. It's over an hour away. Let's be honest. However, I do think, though, that going to Melbourne is going to be a great new beginning. And, everyone on the night, if you're listening, if anyone's listening, congratulations on helping us. And, we're going to miss Berwick a lot. It really sucks to leave, but it's for the best. So,
absolutely.
So, and on that positive note...
on that positive note, international news. Ring of Honor will be coming to Destination America on June 3rd at 8 p.m. Now, if that date sounds familiar, it's because Impact Wrestling is moving to Wednesday nights, also on June the 3rd at 9 p.m. Ring of Honor is giving Impact the rub.
Now, when we say rub, referring to making them look good on the way. To be honest, Ring of Honor, though, it's an original product. It's known for its action. TNA has been anything but. Its wrestling's good, but... it's few and far between.
Well, if you look at sort of the roles of those companies these days, Ring of Honor has almost become the ECW, where a lot of the talent now coming through to WWE have started in Ring of Honor. TNA is almost sort of like the latter years WCW, where it's a lot of the former WWE talent make their way to TNA. And obviously, depending on what your particular taste in wrestling may be, you've probably now got a choice between the two as to which is going to be your favourite. But be interesting to see, obviously, whether both shows do as well as each other in those sorts of slots.
I would almost say Ring of Honor has better production value than Impact.
They've really picked up.
Well, they have been on TV for 3 or 4 years now. They have been on TV for a while.
I've been on for a number of years, plus also their internet television, if you want to call it television, downloadable content. That's been around for years. It's just been always on the cusp. It's up. Ring of Honor is a niche show, though, as well.
Yes.
So it'll be up to them to expand their audience. Hopefully, though, as they are literally total non-stop action, though, in comparison to TNA, hopefully we'll pick up from there.
It would be good to see, because in the end, we're going to win if that does happen.
Okay. It's like
or they could just give up.
But it's like Lucha Underground. It's become almost a cult hit. What they're doing is completely different, and that's the idea, is to be different. It's just the same as a wrestler needs it. How they could get more bookings is by being different.
And also today, a little indie fed called World Wrestling Entertainment put on a show.
They did all right for themselves as well.
Elimination Chamber.
Did they get more than 300?
It was not... I think just
honestly, I don't think their crowd was like as rowdy as the crowd at Colac.
Actually, in all honesty, they probably weren't. It was a pretty dead crowd on this show. The event itself was only announced a couple of weeks ago, and it was not a pay-per-view as such, because it wasn't available through the traditional pay-per-view channels. It was a network exclusive, which is something that they're doing more and more often these days. And look, it was actually one of the better shows I've seen at a WWE for a while. Probably the most surprising thing on the show was Kevin Owens, the former Kevin Steen of Ring of Honor, actually getting the win over John Cena.
Definitely a step in the right direction. It's much like we said the other week, how they're giving these people, the journeymen, a position of importance there, and it's not going to be all their pre-made guys that don't really know the world. But anyway.
Give us a call on 9919-8089. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back after this.
Hoping to 17 that we can put this all behind us. You missed the point that I'm making, and every word that I'm saying sees it go straight over your head. And now the point is gone beyond saving. And how much can a fortnight make? 'Cause you seem so lost and you look so out of place. So how much nothing would change you, but as soon as you turned your back, I met the person that you turned into.
Yeah. FM Community Radio, broadcasting from the Victoria University at Werribee. I've got diabetes and I'm trying to get rid of some of the fat in my diet and around my waistline, but I know there's more than one kind of fat. Should I be cutting down on all the fat in everything I eat?
Some fat is important for good health. If you have diabetes, it's important to limit saturated fat and to use a variety of polyunsaturated and monounsaturated types to achieve a good balance. Some ways to ensure you're getting healthy fats in your diet include stir-frying your meat and vegetables in a little canola oil, or dressing your salad or vegetables with a small amount of olive oil. You can try sprinkling sesame seeds on steamed vegetables, snacking on unsalted nuts, or adding some into your salads and meals. You can use avocado in salads or as a spread on sandwiches or toast. And try to eat more fish, at least 3 times a week, because it contains omega-3, a special type of fat that's good for your heart.
This program is funded by the Australian Government Department of Health and Ageing. You gotta have
pride. Tune in to Open Closet every Monday night at 9 for the most comprehensive look back at the local and international gay news of the week. A preview of the week ahead for everyone in the Rainbow family and all our friends. Some great music and loads of fun along the way. Join me, David White and Neil Maloney as we throw open the closet 9 o'clock every Monday night right here on 88.9 Win FM, the sound of the West. Win FM has a new website with a full program guide, streaming links, program pages, and now with podcasts for every show. Check it out at winfm.org.au.
Thật nha, khi tôi bị mắc cái sách tay ở Việt Nam thì một trong những điều đã giúp tôi khỏi bị phiền phức rắc rối là sự chỉ dẫn thật đơn giản trên trang mạng Smart Traveler. Họ dặn ta nên sao chụp sổ thông hành, visa, giấy bảo hiểm vân vân và đừng cất chung với bản chính, nên khi bị mắc cái sách tay ở chợ, nếu không có bản sao những giấy tờ đó ở trong sách khác thì tôi không biết phải làm gì để giải quyết.
Dù đi chơi ở đâu, ta cũng vào trang mạng smarttraveler.gov.au. Dịch vụ này miễn phí, dễ và hay nữa. Smart Traveler cho mọi du khách, mọi chuyến đi. Được chiếu thẳng bởi chiếc vụ Úc Camera do Hồng Vân và Nguyễn Đình Khánh.
You can hear community radio from Broome to Hobart or go to Fremantle. But right now you're listening to the very best on 88.9 Win FM.
Please, baby, please. They play Good Charlotte on the radio, and that's the way I like it. They play Sleepy Jackson on the radio, and that's the way I like it. Yeah, that's the way I like it. I hear Beyonce on the radio, and that's the way I like it. Cause that's the way I like it. They don't play me on the radio, but that's the way I like it. So
.9 WinFM. Welcome back to Covering the Canvas. I am your host, Jesse Beard, joined here by the Covering the Canvas team. We also have a special in-house guest tonight, Mark. I nearly said Mike, because Benny is pointing at me and making me feel
like... It is Mike.
It is Mike.
No, it's Mark. I'm changing it.
No, Mark, brother.
Now it's Mark. Now it's Mark. Oh, look at that. I stuffed up your last name, and now the easiest name I could have said, I've stuffed up that as well. Welcome to Covering the Canvas. Boxing, wrestling journalist, boxing manager.
Correct.
How you doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. Slowly warming up in here.
Slowly warming up in here.
Correct.
I think Benny's farting, so it is warming up.
Well, come on.
If that's the case, maybe we'll do the rest of this broadcast outside.
Demons flying
out. We'll just put the mic up sort of near the window, and you can stand outside and just shout your answers in.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Well, pretty much, we have to ask this question. It's a bit of a stock standard question, but your interest in wrestling, where did that start from, and how did you actually get involved in wrestling? Because that's usually, after you get bitten by the bug, it's usually pretty quick to make its way into wanting to be part of it.
I remember seeing the Ultimate Warrior go over the Honky Tonk Man for the Intercontinental title. That's my earliest wrestling memory, so that's like 88.
Okay.
And pretty much from there, my oldest brother had introduced me to wrestling. He had a stack of shows, Superstars of Wrestling, early WrestleManias and so forth on tape.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially what drew me in. So it's probably, you know, around the same time that a lot of people, that era of wrestling, were drawn into the industry. But it wasn't until many years later. I actually started as a boxing journalist when I was 11 years of age with the World of Boxing. But in the meantime of doing that, I used to put together my own wrestling newsletters from basically grade 6 onwards. So I'd put them together for my 5 Mark friends. I'd have my own, you know, foolish ratings and write my own stories with fabricated quotes from the guys and so forth.
Not too dissimilar to what's going on at the moment, actually.
No, it's
like Dave Meltzer, like.
Well, I mean, you know, and that was very much early days.
Mm.
But it wasn't until I got online. Once I got online in about 1998, That's when I started to slowly get more into the business as a journalist. But green as grass, obviously, you know. But I started doing a lot of correspondence work for wrestling websites like WrestleZone back in the day, Lords of Pain. Yeah, a number of those ones where you could become an editor with very, very little experience and just slowly built from there.
Okay, and quite often, because we're personal friends outside of here, like I've known you for... 15 years almost.
15? Your memory's a little bit shot.
Yeah.
It's, let me think.
Because I met you at PCW.
March 2002.
Okay, so yeah, 13 close. Years. 13. Hey, dude,
I hope
I'm
we're
tired.
Friends for 15 years, but we'll see.
Yeah. Give it to the end of this episode. But, well, as I say, quite often you regard Bill Apter as your mentor. When did you actually come across Bill in your travels?
That's interesting. I first wrote Bill in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
This is just as he was making the transition from Pro Wrestling Illustrated to Well Magazine. I think he actually made the transition to I think it was late 99 from memory, but it could have been early 2000 because Blake Norton was there before him, and I was also friendly with Blake Norton as well. But anyways, I wrote Bill and asked him for advice on the industry and told him it would be an honour someday to work under him, because that's what I always aspired to. I grew up, you know, reading The Wrestler, Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Then I had the Pro Wrestling Illustrated weekly magazines. I used to pick them up in the city. Inside Wrestling, you know, then, you know, through discovering that Melbourne sports books used to sell old school wrestling magazines for 50 cents a piece, and I started getting Sports Review and all those. Actually, my interest in the industry was more per se working under APTA for those kind of publications than it was aspiring to be in the WWE. So I formed that friendship with Bill, but in the midst of that, I actually landed a pretty good opportunity working for Slam Media, which is Slam Wrestling / run by Canoe out of Canada. And I was working under Greg Oliver. Now, it's a name that a lot of people don't know, but Greg Oliver, if you know all the ECW press books released, the Hall of Fame books, and so on and so forth, he's probably released about 30 books, whether compilations or ones he's authored, and he's probably been the editor for about another 25.
Jeez.
So I started working for him when I was 15 and a half, and built up from there for a few years, and then I remember it pretty clear because it was January 2002, and I was, you know, getting all my paperwork ready for university and so forth because I did journalism at uni. So I'm 18 years of age, and I finally get the message back from Bill Apter telling him that, you know, he's granted me a column in, at the time, was Power of Wrestling. So, you know, at the time I'm thinking, all right, screw university, I'm going to drop out. You know, I got it made, you know. I got to my grand final. In essence, it was my grand final was $125 a column. But I felt like I had the world at my feet at the time. And
absolutely.
To me, that was, you know, sort of setting that goal in my head and being able to get there. I was just, I remember getting the news about 2 a.m. and I couldn't sleep till about 7 a.m. That's how awake I was.
And I mean, to put that in perspective as well, if anyone out there listening doesn't know the significance of the name Bill Apter, he's the wrestling magazine man. He is like, when you grew up, we didn't have the internet back then. We had videos that were probably 6 months old from the video shop, and you had your wrestling magazines. And if you knew the right places to go to, you could get current wrestling magazines with your up-to-date news, or otherwise it was three-month-old magazines that you had to rely on. But they were the Apter mags. They were his work.
Absolutely. And like I remember early days, you know, like all you could find at the video store was 6 to 9 month out of date World Wrestling Federation. You know, forget these WWE business. It was World Wrestling Federation tapes, right? And the compilations. And the first non-WWF tape I seen was Lords of the Ring, hosted by Apter and Gordon Solie. So, you know, it was, and also before that, early 90s, because my brother used to sneak me into the pub, and they used to have old screenings of Pro Wrestling This Week with Bill Apter and Joe Pedicino. So I would have that exposure to Bill Apter as well from there. And so, yeah, I mean, to get that opportunity at the time, I mean, I knew how much it meant to me, but it's only upon looking back at those days and reflecting that I realized how lucky I was, because I was still so young and so green and so inexperienced. Then to be given that opportunity over, you know, from this part of the world, over other people who have come out of this country, I feel blessed.
Well, with that in mind, so you've kind of achieved your goal in journalism at that point, and I met you a couple of months later, and you're working for WOW magazine, was that right? That
well, was one? Or was like that... I was saying, when Bill first contacted me, that's when they started going through the transition. They had World of Wrestling magazine.
That's it, yeah.
That went into liquidation in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So then POW, which was WOW, became POW in the UK.
Yes.
And the name change came about because WOW went into liquidation and ironically ended up selling out to Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the naming rights. So it had to become Power of Wrestling. But it still had a high circulation. Its circulation at the time was about 100,000 magazines internationally. And then also they had a pretty strong online presence.
If you recall, I actually had a whole stack of them. And you got into my car one time, they're all over the boot. And
I remember.
Yeah. I met you at a PCW show at that point. You were coming to cover that. But you were known, I was introduced, I think, through Mike Burr. you know, he kind of mentioned that you were coming down.
Well, that's another guy I actually went to primary school
with.
Yeah,
so...
You went to school with Mike Burr, huh?
Yeah, I'm...
What a small world.
I don't know if it's a positive or negative, but I'm responsible for introducing him to pro wrestling.
See, that was what I was going to actually ask you was, because I met you at an Australian wrestling show, when did you actually get involved in the Australian wrestling scene?
That's a good question. I actually attended a few of the old ACW shows, which was one at the Floridia Cheese Factory. It would have been in like 95 or 96. And I got onto the product when they had the old slot on Channel 31. So I attended a few shows and enjoyed the shows, even though the wrestling was of a fairly mediocre standard. And then it wasn't until a few years later that I actually seen an advertisement online by Jim Demirov and George Demirov looking for people to help out on the NWA shows. So I just thought, yeah, cool. You know, it'd be a good experience just to go out there, check out the shows. I used to help Jim set up the rings. So for anyone who thinks I haven't paid my dues or whatever in the business, I paid them many times. And, you know, I actually got to know a very, very young Trent Wattman back then who'd gone to work as Rave, Trent Brash. I'm not sure where he's at nowadays, but he was like a year younger than me. So he would have been like 15 back then. And that was my first introduction to the Australian scene. And from there, it just grew from there, where I started covering the scene. I was working a little bit for Rowan's website back then. I think it was WWF Down Under initially, and then it became wrestling.net.au or whatever it's become nowadays. But I was working for them, and so from there, I was covering the scene a little bit. I was covering the scene for Wrestling Weekly. I was doing a few correspondence things, more just like base results and so forth for The Wrestling Spectator, and also Wade Keller at Pro Wrestling Torch, and just built from there. But it was once I got to the magazines with APTA that I felt like in my heart I'd kind of made it a little bit.
What's the feeling like being a 15, 16-year-old kid and having these grown men chasing after you to help you work with their company? And
It's quite interesting. You know, I've never had that monster ego of self-importance my whole life. Thinking to myself, hey, I've got you at my mercy, or whatever, you know, or, you know, you have to do me some favor for whatever reason, you know, like whether it's a favorable treatment, monetary payment, whatever it was. So, I mean, a lot of it, I just took it in my stride. I just try to take every experience and take from as much as I can and keep moving forward and learn.
In that time, you've been, as you just said, you've been responsible for helping a lot of Australian talent out. What names would you say if you've helped kind of get that international exposure? Because you've helped some of the guys get over in Japan, for example, a couple of names over in the States even. Like, you were responsible really for exposing Daniel Beaumont to Japanese wrestling through Madman Pondo.
Absolutely. Pondo was a guy I'd interviewed a number of times. And so at the time, I was talking to him actually about, because I was always trying to put over the guys that I saw as having real progressive talent in Australia. So one thing that people don't know is I was very, very close at one point to getting Spike Steele to ECW early days.
Really?
When
I was,
wow.
Early days, when Rob Feinstein, pre-scandal, that's how early it was. And that was when Gabe Sapolsky was the booker, and I was chatting to Gabe about maybe working on a talent exchange and so forth. But Spike just kept running into one quandary after another with his injuries, but he was a phenomenal talent back then. But he was one of the guys I was working on, and amongst them, you know, Mad Dog McRae, I put Madman Pondo onto his stuff and thought that one day they could hook up and have a tremendous match. And ended up happening a number of years later through a different means, and it was through, you know, obviously Beaumont being involved to bring him out, but Dan is one of the guys that, you know, I assisted and put him onto the right people in Japan so that he'd have some credibility to be able to move forward. And he went and did some positive things out of it from there. But like I've always maintained to you, you know, Benny, because I've said it to you personally, I feel like he probably never really appreciated the opportunity that I presented to him, because I've never even heard the word thank you once. But that's okay. That's life. You know, you do your best to help those around you and you try and guide those the best you can.
I suppose the positive out of that would be like guys like Gabriel Wolf, Chris Trans. They've been given the opportunity to go over to Japan through Daniel. So
absolutely.
There has been assistance done to help that out. Over the years, so we'll move on a little bit. So after your initial time, you started covering PCW shows, and soon there was a walkout at PCW.
Correct.
You were you came along with a lot of us over to...
What's
the reason you kind of made the shift? Because you really did...
Well, you know what's interesting is because, you know, when I started at the magazine, I wanted to feature one particular promotion.
Hmm.
And I was watching two products in Victoria at Loggerheads. There was All Star Wrestling at the time, and there was PCW.
Mm-hmm.
And PCW had the younger talent and the more promising talent. All Star to me was a all flash, no dash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've said this directly to Rowan and all those involved. So whether their perspectives differ with me or whatever, they know where I've always stood with it. I thought that their shows were very gimmick based.
Okay,
but they lacked the kind of promise that the young PCW roster had. I mean, you look at the time, you had guys like Spike, you had guys like Mad Dog coming through, you had Steve James, Fuel coming through, Mike Burr. You know, these are all guys who went on to work all over the country in the years to come.
People were on top of the scene.
Absolutely, and they were all kids. They were, you know, 18, 19 years of age. I mean, Spike was a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the twins, you know, who were working that era.
That would be Double Impact.
Double Impact, that's right. I mean, they were working both products, but they had great talent.
Mm.
And, you know, I went and met with everyone on the scene. And when I met with Ken Rock...
Mm-hmm.
He's the only one that actually really wanted to go out of his way and assist to put his product out there. So he basically gave me a free rein at his shows. You know, there was no, oh, Mike's not one of the boys, so shutting me off from backstage, whatever. I could walk into the show and basically have the same rights as a promoter or a booker in terms of being able to access all areas.
Mm.
And so to me, that always assisted me to put the best stories out there.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to cover the product to the best of my capacities. But I did try and vary it a little bit with interstate promotions.
Okay. And just quickly, I think Shane wants to ask a question.
Sure.
I kind of keep jumping all over the poor guy. You covered PCW very heavily, especially in the early days. What kind of... You've mentioned about the young talent. How hard was it to decide who you were going to give some exposure to? Because at that point, everyone was doing such innovative things for that time on a local level. A lot of high-flying, a lot of hardcore was very popular then. So how were you able to balance, Mad Dog here, or do I put Stephen James or Fuel, as he was known back then? You know, how do I give this exposure? Who do I give the nod to without being afraid of alienating someone?
It was tricky. So I mean, you go with your instincts.
Mm.
You look at what the product is, and you try and find the stories within the story.
Mm.
So for example, I mean, it seemed like almost every month back then, Lobo, aka Henry Jones, was carrying one of these young guys to the match of their career.
Mm.
So it was almost near impossible not to give Lobo exposure each month. But I try to present him more as a dance partner, because Henry would have these chats with me all the time and say to me, Mike, if you're going to put focus on anyone, put it on the young guys. They're the future of the sport in this country. So I try to vary it a little bit, especially with the photos. I mean, if you look at the first, it was actually, I think, the second issue, there's a picture of Benny trying to fend off Mad Dog from from taking his eye out with a light tube, a broken light tube.
Very disinterested looking Mad Dog.
I very much tried to vary the photos that ran in there, because as the old saying goes, a picture's worth a thousand words.
Mm.
So oftentimes that exposure could do amazing things to the talent. But you know, it's just going with my instincts and trusting them. But to go back to saying you'd asked before, you asked about the transition with the federations and so forth. And it was basically because I acted as an in-between a lot of times with the talent and the promoters, because I would catch out problems. At PCW, I would catch out problems. And there's a number of times I went to Ken and explained to him the problems that he had within his roster from looking at it from a neutral perspective. And I felt like at the time of the walkout to the PWA that, you know, Ken and the rest of the personnel just stopped listening to the talent, and they lost the trust of the talent. And to me, it was about covering the talent, not the promotion. So when the talent shifted, I had to shift to cover the talent.
Sounds pretty cool. I think we've got to go to a break, don't we, Jesse?
Yeah, we're just going to go to a quick break. It is 20 minutes to 9. Stay tuned after 8 o'clock for the Open Closet. We'll be back after this.
Lately, I've been losing sleep, dreaming about the things that we could be. But baby, I've been praying hard,
said no more counting dollars, we'll be counting stars. Yeah, we'll be counting stars. Swing my heart across the line. In my face is flashing signs. Seek it out and ye shall find. Old, but I'm not that old. Young, but I'm not that bold. And I don't think the world is sold. I'm just doing what we're told. I feel something so right. Doing the wrong thing. And I feel something so wrong. Doing the right thing. I could lie, could lie, could lie. Everything that kills me makes me feel alive. Burn down this river every turn. Hope is our four-letter word. Make that money, watch it burn. Oh, but I'm not that old. Young, but I'm not that bold. And I don't think the world is sold. I'm just doing what we're told. And I feel something so wrong. We're doing the right thing. I could lie, could lie, could lie. Everything that drowns me makes me wanna fly. Sink in the river, the lessons I learned. Take that money, watch it burn. Sink in the river, the lessons I learned. Take that money, watch it burn. Sink in the river, the lessons I learned. Take that money, watch it burn. Sink in the river, the lessons I learned. Everything that kills me makes me feel alive.
News, sport, weather and community information. You get it all here on 88.9 Win FM.
My older brother's name is Shane. We've always been the best of friends. He taught me how to surf and change a tyre, and I taught him how not to be an idiot in front of girls. I hope he was paying attention, because I'm going to make him wear a t-shirt with my face printed on it for 21 days.
Open Family Australia want you to team up with a friend, relative or whoever to take up the Open Family Australia 21 Challenge. Be as creative or ridiculous as you like, and the money you raise will go towards helping youth at risk. Register at 21challenge.com.au.
I'm going to go to the house.
tele o tāngu mawhamu kuka ese ese te whiriwhiri ai. A waore nei au au nanga wai ai to mai whapitoa. Ile kuka ina so se tu ai ngā tāngu mawha, ai mai se lawa i tāngu mawha sā. Ala au nei loi telefoni o whātor tasi, fitu tasi walu, whāru o fitu. Ole o whātas tasi, iwa ono iwa, walu whātoru.
Missed your favourite Win FM show? The Win FM website now has podcasts available for all programs. Visit winfm.org.au, go to the program page and click the podcast link. Win FM Community Radio.
Win FM, welcome back to Covering the Canvas. I'm your host, Chess Beer, joined here by the Covering the Canvas team and special in-house guest, boxing and wrestling journalist, man of a thousand billion trillion stories, Mark.
Mike.
Mike.
The more you confuse him, the more he just gets worse.
I'm really, really sorry, Mike.
Mike Altamirano.
I'll just turn my mic off.
Mike's going to come back every week until Jesse gets his name right.
Punch him. I don't think I have that much time.
Okay. What I was going to ask, unless you want to ask, Shane.
Look, I'm enjoying half the time just listening to these questions and answers as well, feel free.
Okay. Well, what I was going to ask, I feel bad. But what I was going to ask was the magazine. Now, at this point, you were saying, you were riding high with it, especially at that age. You were coming to the Australian shows as well. You're giving so many opportunities to so many people. I just remember one day it was there and one day it wasn't. What kind of started the decline of the magazine and your role in it even? I don't know exactly what happened first.
I don't think I had a role in the decline of the magazine, so I'm not going to put my hand up for that.
But, well, you could have been serving drinks.
Essentially, look at what the newsstand was when I started compared to what the newsstand is now. When I started, there was one point, there was probably 9 or 10 wrestling publications, and I was writing for like 4 of them at the time. Now, what's remaining? There's Fighting Spirit magazine, that's it?
Yeah.
I think there's one. So if you look at it realistically, there's just a steady decline. I remember the circulation. WOW, apparently, before POW. WOW magazine had 200,000 circulation. POW went to 100,000. By the time POW closed its doors, it went to 50,000. But then, remember, POW became Total Wrestling magazine.
That's right, yep.
And that the whole idea of that morphing into Total Wrestling was it was actually a smaller mag. It was fewer pages, probably about, I think, 20 fewer pages, but it was also a smaller format. So that was to save money on the printing and so forth, because to advertise in the publication was the same as what it was to advertise in PAL. But by the time we closed with Total Wrestling, it was 25,000 circulation. So this is like August 2004. So I've been there, since pretty much the start of 2002, having a really, really good run. I felt like I was slowly working up the ranks. I was only 20 at the time, but Bill was giving me a lot of opportunities. He was slowly giving me more than news coverage. He was delegating more features to me. And the shame of it is there's a publication that obviously never hit the press because the company had filed for Chapter 11. But I'd written 3 feature stories in what would have been the next issue of Total Wrestling. John Farrer was departing the magazine. He was one of the main feature writers. So APTA was grooming me to come in and be one of the next guys, covering more internationally, because that's what I was screaming for. I wanted to do the feature articles. I wanted to do the coverage that I was needing to do elsewhere, because I'd say to Bill all the time, it's fine to do the news. I'm happy doing the Australian news, but I want to do more. I had my own concepts of, little story arcs, like, I'd pitch, for example, a story about each month, a two-page spread on someone, telling a story of their greatest rib in the industry. So that's saying you could have done a million of them.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
And I end up taking those online. There's probably 6 or 7 that I published online later. But I had 4 or 5 of them in the bank, and Bill was ready to approve and run with them.
That's awesome.
And so I felt like I was being groomed to slowly, slowly step up and develop. But developed to my skill set and to my mentality, because obviously, when you're 20 years of age, you think you can conquer the world and you think you deserve to be editor, but the truth is you're nowhere near it. You don't have the life experience.
Cool.
So it went from that to all of a sudden one day getting an email, the magazine has gone into Chapter 11. It was actually someone had forwarded me a link. It wasn't even Bill himself. Bill got onto me maybe 4 or 5 hours later. And so essentially, I go from feeling like I'm going to be one of the next guys in line at the publication to writing a story for Slam Wrestling about the magazine going out of business. And so I then got to a point where I had to start looking at the next phase, and I was working for a number of places online. I was working for voiceofwrestling.com at the time, and they were talking to me about spearheading, like, to be the editor-in-chief for a little magazine that they're going to start running. Then they also presented me with the opportunity to co-host on Radio Forum. But that was saying that at the time I wasn't interested in. I just wanted to keep it, purely on the press. So for a while I floated kind of without a home. I was writing feature articles here or there, and probably towards the end of 2004 I had to make a decision as to where I wanted to be, and I made a decision to wholeheartedly focus on my screenwriting at the time and to focus on chasing my boxing aspirations, which were to be the best manager possible. So I looked to move forward to the next chapter of my life.
Well, like I said when we came back, you're a man of a thousand stories at least, so we've decided as a group that we will have you back next week, and it'll be, well, as long as you're okay with that as well. That
you have me back.
That sounded very egotistical of me. But no, definitely, we'll have more than happy to have you back next week.
I'm looking forward to it. We've got so many more stories.
We've scratched the surface.
Yeah, absolutely. That greatest rib sounds awesome. I'd love to have a look at that online.
Well, maybe in the week I'll dig a few out and send them to you so you can do
definitely that sounds good.
Check them out. I'm not even sure if they'll be active online anymore because
yeah, that's
true. With the wonders of the internet, you know, stories seem to disappear as the websites drop off, or someone forgets to renew a domain name.
Mm.
But I believe I got most of them all backed up, whether on a USB drive or an old computer or whatever. So that'll be a pleasure.
Definitely.
Be a pleasure to be back next week.
Make sure you tune in next week, 8 o'clock, same time. Stay tuned after 9 o'clock for the Open Closet.
It's too hard to sleep. I got the sheets on the floor, nothing on me. And I can't take it no more, it's 100 degrees.